What's going on, my people? You're listening to The Score, an urban music education podcast hosted by Eric and Justin, where we discuss tips and strategies on how to become a more effective, compassionate, and culturally responsive music educator. What's going on, my people? This is Eric.
And this is Justin.
And we're your hosts for
The Score.
Welcome to episode 35, Be Willing to Teach Us To.
Yeah. It's another, here you go with them titles again, brother. Man.
Let's start off by thanking everybody that shared our previous episode and our podcast now and our social media pages. We are grateful. I won't lie. As soon as I posted episode 34, I did get some kickback.
Yeah.
And one of which was almost threatening, but, for the people that know me, and let's say the old Eric, you know what I'm saying? And so for me to, I guess you could say I honestly stayed calm, even though I got extremely furious because I was being called a racist. I was being called a victim. I was being called, and it's several. Like I can list several things that I was being called.
Of course.
And the individual wasn't willing to even kind of understand my stance on it because all he read was the title "White Fragility."
Right.
And obviously he took it in a different way. But quite honestly, he reacted to what white fragility as an example. But all that to be said, in the last 2 weeks, the reception that we've been getting from social media and people
amazing.
From across the country, man. And so
amazing.
Since then, Justin's been featured on F Flat Books. If you haven't gotten to check out that conversation with Sarah,
check it out.
I should be having one coming up as well. And we have several people we need to set up times with. Justin and I will be some guests on different podcasts. So we are eternally grateful for the opportunities that we've been getting. But at the same time, the reception that we've been getting from the podcast and that specific episode.
We didn't even know that was going to happen, man.
Not at all.
Literally talking about what we feel is going on in the culture and what's important. And, man, y'all have been, man, just thanks. Thanks for spreading the word. Thanks for us just having a conversation. Hopefully it's helping you wherever you are in your teaching journey.
So since then, I've you know, getting, as you mentioned with Sarah the other day, on F Flat Books, is we're getting to know kind of the culture of music classrooms from other parts of the country. You and I were brought up in the Texas system, and we teach in the Texas system, which we found out is starkly different from other states and other parts of the, you know what I mean? And so it's awesome to find that out. So I started kind of thinking about, we're in this moment, you know, people are graduating from undergrad or people are considering other positions.
They're,
you know, and so one of the things that I started thinking about were some of my students that, which is just mind-blowing to me, I guess is saying that I'm old now, is they're graduating from college and they're becoming teachers.
Yep.
And when I have these conversations, when they come back from their schools, their respective schools, they all tell me that the majority of the students that they're with, their peers, have openly said that they are seeking only positions in some of the more affluent or top name programs.
Yeah.
So the conversation almost doesn't even exist, that of wanting to go work in an urban inner city, Title I, majority student of color population. Right. You know, those conversations don't necessarily exist. And it started reminding me of my career and our career collectively when I had this intent. I remember and I wish I would have wrote it down my senior year, but there was an interview that I had done my freshman year at Prairie View where they asked me, like, what are your career goals? And I actually wrote down to be a high school band director and or administrator at a Title I school in Houston. And so I kind of spoke that into existence, and I had that mindset. Like, nobody was going to break that. So I was set. I'm going to get an education, and I'm going to come back and serve my community.
Yeah.
And so now I'm in a different place, and I'm researching on a whole different level that whenever I look up anything relating to urban music teaching, the majority, which reflects our profession, are white music educators kind of conceptualizing their experience or that of others teaching in urban settings.
Yeah.
So you and I have a unique perspective because we are products sometimes of those environments, and we're going back and teaching in those environments.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, when we say be willing to teach us too, in the, the title of this episode, specifically speaking to students like Justin and I, that might look like us, that might come from settings like us.
Yeah.
And so I really want to advocate in this episode as to why it should be important, you know, for if you're an undergrad, to consider teaching in schools that might reflect the Justin and I. If you are considering another job to do this, or if you're even in this setting where I've given this session before, is that it? I always started off is that when people are having issues in teaching in urban or Title I or inner city settings, they always go to people who they would assume would be mentors. It's like, you know, hey, I got to do X, Y, and Z, and I'm dealing with this. But honestly, you know, what's your advice? And the first thing that comes out of the mouth usually is, you know, finish it up and go find another job.
Yeah. Use it as a stepping stone.
Exactly. And and I'm here to say that it shouldn't be that.
No.
Because there are, you know, you're going to have issues anywhere. You can, you know what I'm thinking? And so we can dig in. So when I talk about this, Justin, what comes to mind to you, man?
I think for two things. One, I think you and me both kind of identify on a level of representation matters, right? That people that look like you and I, that come from communities like us, need to be willing to go back and be that bridge for somebody, for those kids that need to see that. The other thing I think is, how do we use our privilege, right? That's what we talked about in the last episode, making sure we're using the tools and the privileges that we have to make the most of our life, make the most of our career. So what am I using that some of these kids and a lot of our students in these Title I and urban whatever areas that they're not going to get because most people are unwilling to go to those places? Mm-hmm. So we're unwilling to give them those things. We're unwilling to really go and teach in those, you know, just hard places to really get things going. And you leave a bunch of kids with no opportunity. They're learning and figuring it out for themselves. So I think for me, you wrote down you wanted to teach, be administrator and a band director in Title I schools. I remember specifically saying in my high school years, I want to be the educator that I wish I had in my middle school years. I had Mr. Taylor in high school, but in middle school, I didn't, you know, I was one of maybe eight or nine kids that was black in the band. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I was like, what would it be like if I was able to be the teacher that I wish I had? Somebody that looked like me, somebody that jammed music like me, somebody that came from a similar background that I could connect with, but was really interested in band and, you know, what we know as Texas music education. So I think one is representation. We create, you know, people create what they see. The more they see more Erics and more Justins and all of the other people out there that are in those environments, the more we'll see that repeating coming out of the Texas States, the Texas Techs, the UTs, the PVs, and all of those schools, right? So it's that. And what do I have that some of these kids will never get because teachers aren't rushing to those environments, right? And we can create quality in these places. Do not let the Title I, do not let this urban environment, low income, don't let that stifle your vision and your dream for what you may be trying to build as a music educator. It's there. It's there, man.
Exactly. And you saying that right now brought me back to 2013, man, when I was considering the Davis High School, now known as Northside High School position.
Right.
And I was approached by, at the time, one of our administrators for the district for me to consider that job.
Yeah.
And I started getting told, hey, man, you shouldn't take that job because, you know, you're going to end your career there, or nothing of value has ever really come out of that. And those are exactly to what research has shown, that people operate with a deficit mindset.
Right.
When they look at it from the outside.
Yeah.
You know, and so I walked into that program, and at the time it was 97% lower income. 97%. Wow. And then when I talked to administrators, I was like, so the other 3%, that's all we have? And they're like, no, to be honest, we honestly think we were at about 100%. But the 3% is what we didn't get back because we do the lunch application here in the state of Texas. And so I was just mind blown. And so that in itself gave me an anecdotal, but yet it validated the research that I'm going into my doctorate in, saying that people go into these settings with a deficit mindset. And so expectations are lowered.
Yeah.
You know, and so already from the get-go, you don't have anywhere to go. You don't have any growth to happen, or you don't have anything, like you said, these opportunities that could arise.
Yeah.
You already stifled them, and you stopped them from even happening because you walked in labeling and putting this limit that doesn't even exist. And so are we here to say that there won't be challenges? No, just like anywhere, you can either think about it, you know, I always put it this way. You want parents emailing you for your curriculum so they can, you know, help at school, or will you want sometimes where you it would be difficult to reach some parents, you know?
Right. And so it has its pluses and its negatives. And what I think we have to remember is that the narrative cannot shape what we're doing. Right. We're going into these, and you and me can both attest to, we've also been in environments where they say everybody has an instrument. Mm-hmm. Everybody is taking private lessons. Everybody has a pencil on the stand and they are ready to go. And we have ran into, we can both sit here, hand on the Bible, and say that we love the experiences that we had. And if we did it all over again and where we currently are in our career, we'd stay here. I'm not looking, and I don't, that's not a farce to those kids. It's not a knock to those environments. I'm a believer in that kids are kids. They will be whatever you make them out to be once you go in and put in the work. It's about, are you willing to do that work? And the low end, like you said, without having those parents, you know, emailing them, they may not be able to get contact, but you get that relationship with those kids. Mm-hmm. Once you get that relationship, you'll be surprised at how many parents show up. You'll be surprised at how many parents are calling you and emailing you and saying, hey, are you Mr. McLean? Are you Mr. Jimenez? My kid talks about you all the time. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's about not allowing the narrative to shape what's inside of us. I'm just a firm believer that I'm really good at what I do, right? Me and Eric are very confident, and I just feel like, man, if we bet the chips against me, I'm willing to go in and I know I can change it. I know I can create quality, successful, competent band programs. I just know it.
You know, when you said that, I taught at a summer camp one year. That I stepped out of my comfort zone. That, you know, as many listeners know, the majority of my career and all of it, quite honestly, has been in inner city Houston and teaching primarily students of Houston Independent School District. Mm-hmm. So I did a camp that did not have not one student from the Houston Independent School District. And when I looked at my roster, it was all students from very, very well-known band programs.
All right, know what you're talking about.
In the suburbs. And so I looked at it and I was like, oh, man.
Here we go.
Oh, man. I got to teach my butt off to prove to these kids that that I can teach, you know, and I already and these were middle school age kids already. Mm-hmm. And I'm walking in with this like, I got to do this. I got to prove myself.
Right.
Where I promise you, if I had a list full of HISD kids, I wouldn't have had that same anxiety.
Right.
But then so I went in there and I was like, you know what? I'm going to do what I do and I'm going to do it well. You know, and at the end of that camp, I was surprised, man. It was like, Mr. Jimenez, you were one of our better teachers. I've been coming to this camp for X, Y, and Z many years.
Wow.
And then one of the best opportunities that I had was to impact and directly connect with one student of color. Mm. And he came up to me. He's like, hey, Mr. Jimenez, man, you don't understand that this spoke so much to me, sir.
Man.
And I want to thank you so much because my pops, man, he be throwing down some jazz for me. And at times I try to go my band director, but, you know, he don't even really want to entertain the conversation when it comes to jazz because we don't have a jazz band. But thank you so much. And I was like, oh, my. And
that right there, bro. That right there.
Yes. Yes, man.
Oh, my gosh, bro.
He made my summer because, like I said, I walked in there thinking like, man, they're going to judge me. They're going to be like this Mexican guy from Houston ISD doesn't know how to teach, you know. And so I walked in with these insecurities.
Yeah.
I had already been teacher of the year. I had already done sweepstakes at UIL. I had already done all those things that we strive for. And this insecurity.
It's that narrative, bro. And we've talked about this, you and me, just as friends and colleagues. The narrative makes us think like we're less than and we can only survive in these aspects. Mm. When in actuality, great teaching is great teaching. And I think you just hit it on the head. Be willing to go into these environments because kids are all the same. You just got to be willing to figure out what buttons, what avenues to go down. How do we impact? How do I reach this student? And once you figure that out, you got those kids, man. And I would just say that because of what we know about funding and education and in these areas, if there's not people like you and me willing to go to those classrooms and really willing to build those band programs, those kids won't really experience a level of musicianship and expectation and of success until they get to college. That's if they stick with it. Right. We're missing out on music majors because we don't consider those fields worth tilling.
That You guys touched on a spot, because when I dipped my toe into research my first semester at the University of Houston, I actually did the factors contributing to music teachers pursuing a career in music education.
Yeah.
And the top reason is their secondary music teacher. So, you know, that's going to be your classroom, high school, band director, choir director, orchestra director is considered the most influential person to make the decision to pursue a career in music.
Yeah.
The second was private lesson teachers. So then that made me start questioning, wait, a lot of my kids can't afford private lessons.
Come on, Eric. Come on, brother.
So that means I have to be that person even more so and impacting them. And then so, and then you working with me, you know, I did not shove down their throat to be a music teacher.
No.
I presented the opportunity just saying, like, hey, if this is something you want to do, come and have a conversation with myself, Mr. McLean.
Right.
We can guide you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And so I started thinking about, if we're trying to reach even more students, like you just said, if we want to create more music teachers that look like us or empathize like us or are socially aware like us, and we start churning the new wave of music educators are going to make even more of an impact, then it has to come. And if you are a secondary music teacher, I want you to be present to the impact that you're having.
Come on,
on the decision of that student to say, you know what, I think I want to study music.
Right.
And in my high school band director, Mr. Smith, was that person for me.
Yes.
Whether he knows it or not,
yeah,
you know, his actions, you know, his the opportunity for me to travel to Orlando, Florida, to go to Walt Disney World because I was in the band, to go to Chicago, to go march in a parade because I was in the band. And so I started thinking, man, this guy is providing these opportunities that if I was not in band, if I wasn't in music, I probably wouldn't have experienced them.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, man, this is so cool. I'm going to teach music to provide these opportunities to lower income kids or inner city kids or Title I kids. And I'm gonna do this and use my vehicle to say, you know what? Hey, I get to take you out of state. I get to expose you to X, Y, and Z. You know what I mean? And so I always had this vision of saying, like, music allowed and provided that opportunity. And I got to, you know, we got to shout out to BJ, Balaji Sibar. Boy, he always talked about that exposure creates opportunity.
Yes, it does.
And when he told me about them, and it because it's so true, how many of us, when we saw, for me, it was seeing Maynard Ferguson in person. I mean, I'm talking about, I was 5 feet away from this guy, and he was just blazing. And I'm thinking to myself, how does he do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and from that day, my brother was the one that asked me. He's like, why don't you study music, Eric? You know, and it was that opportunity for me to see it in person to say, whoa, okay, this is an opportunity for me. Because I when I'm growing up, I was like, I got to study business because I got to make a lot of money because we don't make a lot of money. You know what I mean?
Right.
Me growing up lower income, I was already, that's my mentality. I have to get an education and get a career field that's going to make a lot of money. And then that phrase that came, and I will repeat it all the time, that my pops and my brother both said, do what you love and the money will come.
Yeah.
And when I pursued this career, it's still to this day, I have yet to regret me going into this field. When I know I probably would have been more well received in other fields.
Oh, yeah.
I would have probably.
You would have fit the status quo.
Exactly. Or even moved up the ranks quicker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those opportunities already lend themselves. So I really want to push this opportunity for you to consider a school that you might have not considered. And then if you're an undergrad, this is your opportunity to challenge some of your professors or even just see questions. Let me not say challenge, because some of us might go in there and chop some heads off. You know what I mean? By all means, ask, hey, can you recommend a program that I can go observe? Is there a teacher you can connect me with? Is there X, Y, and Z? Because even to this day, some of our collegiate professors can discourage them from teaching in those settings.
Yes.
When that might be their calling, that might be the best fit for them. And then, you know, so this is an opportunity for us to start seeking those opportunities and settings, because that year that I spent as an administrator and sitting in so many interviews, the first question, if it's not evident on your resume, is, have you ever worked with kids?
Exactly.
You know, and so go and observe, go and volunteer and be present to those, or consider this opportunity to go into those settings that could eventually be the most rewarding of your career.
And for those of us, like you said, Eric, you said the secondary teachers are, you are the front of the battle in this war and this mindset that we're trying to push to help people see the beauty in education. Most people become what they've seen. So when we say exposure creates opportunity, you saw Mr. Smith, I saw Mr. Taylor. You understand what I'm saying? And so when you see these people, it not only lets you know that this is possible, but it lets you know that, wait a minute, I can do this? Like, we don't, like, if we just want to be honest, we look at where we are in life and in society, and we put people in places and in jobs based on how we look, based on where you're from, and it's like, education is to breed minds, to let them know that the world's possibilities are endless. So when you have these kids in your class, you are that bridge. You're that stepping stone. For my college professors and my music ed professors and doctors, help these kids see that the tool that they have is used to build students. It's not only used in this area. It's not only used in this district. The tool is not good. The tool is not this great tool that we have, and it only works if you're in this perfect environment with the perfect climate. No, man, the tool breaks down walls. The tool breaks down barriers that kids can see a different day, a different light. And those very students that you're telling, you know, indirectly not to go to these areas, you're missing out on quality kids that will add fame and will add the name to your school of music that we all wish we had. You understand what I'm saying?
As we take a break from our discussion, we're jumping into the segment called In Rotation. During this time, each of us will get an opportunity to share what we're currently listening to. Favorite artists, genre, album, playlist. If you have any recommendations, drop us a line on our social media platforms at PodTheScore or send us an email, podthescore@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you. In rotation, ladies and gentlemen. Man, so this past week, I'm not going to lie, I was jamming some stuff that I would have probably listened to back in high school, man.
Okay.
So, you know, Powwow, as I am affectionately named.
Who are you?
You know, but then I started thinking about the Swisher House Camp. So those of you that are not familiar with a genre of hip hop, a subgenre of hip hop from the Houston area that's called screw music. And it's, it's slow down music, and then it was chopped and screwed to have a downbeat and upbeat present when you switch the fader. So look that up if you're not aware of it. So, but because of what's happening, if you're not aware, Big Floyd, affectionately known here in the Third Ward in the Houston area, actually was featured
on a record
for DJ Screw.
Yeah, man.
So DJ Screw was the innovator of this subgenre of hip hop. Without having to go into an entire lecture of this phenomenal individual, because when you find out about the work that he actually did and combining hoods and combining people from different neighborhoods that otherwise would have probably been fighting
for
and
sure.
bringing them to the screw house, that Big Floyd was featured on one of his albums. I'm not sure which one, but I wanted to give a shout out to DJ Screw for this sure. platform that has been, you know, a staple of what it is to be from Houston. And also I wanted to let people know, if you're not aware, that there is an actual collection of DJ Screw research at the University of Houston.
Wow.
So if you know that's available for you to go see. There's artifacts, there's notes, there's records, there's, you know, actual tangible items that he used to wear. Yeah. And so DJ Screw, that's the guy I'm shouting out today.
They're putting a movie out too, a bio on DJ Screw and the whole Screw Houston.
Let me also add, man, which was surprising to me, because I gave a lecture to at Prairie View last year in one of my classes on this. That I always assumed, you know, because it was kind of passed down to me that his name was given to him because that, you know, he screwed the music down into a slower tempo.
Yeah.
Where actually he's from Central Texas and I believe the Bastrop area where he was born and raised before he moved to Houston. And he connected his parents' car speakers in his room and brought his parents' record table to play some records. And one of his best friends was with him one day, and he grabbed a record when he was done listening to it, and he grabbed an actual screw and scratched it. And his buddy told him, he's like, "Hey, man, what you think you are, man? DJ Screw?" And he's like, "Sure, I like it." So the records he did not like, he would scratch them with an actual screw. So that way he knew later on that to not play.
I ain't playing that record.
So, what you got, Justin?
I'm not trying to be a downer, but with all of the stuff that's going on, man, I been listening to this artist for a while. His name is Swoop, but he has a song on his album called Shine called Black Boy, and it's really like this open letter for him as a father to his children, to his sons, and he's just kind of empowering them, affirming them, and letting them know about who they are, the beauty of who they are, of to, you know, give the same respect out that they want for themselves, and just kind of this history of African-American history in America and how it affects them. And it's just, it's really dope. It's really dope. So check it out. Black Boy by Swoop.
All right, we're back. So, Justin, if I want you to talk to Justin in 2012.
Wow.
You're coming up. That was your first year of teaching, correct?
Fall 2011. Remember you?
2011, my fault. Yeah.
Remember you finagled me into
that's right.
A car.
Yeah. So I want you to put yourself in that perspective. I want you to kind of look back at that Justin that's coming out of college and ready to work. What would you tell him if he was considering working and teaching kids like us?
Man, knowing what I know, I probably would have told him that no matter how you're feeling and the fear that you feel about coming out as an educator and just being very, you know, unknowing of not only what to expect, but just how am I going to do as an educator? How are you going to do? Should I be only trying to teach kids that look like me? Should I open myself up to other environments? I would just tell him that the way that this is going to go and the environment that you need to be in is the environment that will help you build those blind spots and weak spots of your career and of who you are as a person, not just as an educator, but as a person. And if you want to grow, if you really want to see growth in your ability in the academia part of being a music educator, then this is the environment, because it forces you to go into uncomfortable places to gain answers, to go back to that space to teach. And it's the only way that you're going to work. It's the only way that you're really going to learn without being in an environment where we know it's quick to puff yourself up, because you don't really have to do anything. You don't really have to pour yourself into the work. Things are kind of ready made for you. And if you want to leave a mark, if you want to have an impact on kids, and you want to really shape kids that don't see this in everyday life, they may not even have this on the forefront of their brain, this is where you need to be. This is where you need to be to watch this, even to lose some of your implicit biases that you may not even know you had just because you thought of yourself in one way. But this environment, these students, this culture, this side of town, this specific school, the lack of funding, the lack of whatever is going to make you the educator that everybody wants to hear from years down the road. Mm. That's what I would say, man. Because that's what, like, bro, to be honest, and I say this all the time, I even think about where I'm at right now, and most people, they would look at you and me, right? And they'll be like, man, those are the careers I want, man. This one guy's, you know, he's in college teaching. This other guy's in one of the best districts in the state, and he got the funding and all of this. But they don't understand, man. They don't know that to be of integrity and to hold down these jobs the way we are, we had to go through fire. And obviously, myself in different ways, you in different ways, but just speaking personally, bro, going through fire, and I talked about this on F-Lab Books, like dealing with majority Latino community, it made me shut up. It made me forget that, hey, you're not this, you're bright, you know a lot of stuff, but you need to sit and you need to listen, you need to be attentive, you need to understand that there may be some similarities between Black and the Latino culture, but there are some nuances, there are some differences that you have to understand and cherish before you can push. You understand what I'm saying? It took me having to sit in that band hall and know, okay, these kids don't have private lessons. How are they gonna learn embouchure when you need to sit? How can they learn if you haven't fully taken yourself through the process of learning? Yeah, we know you know the information, you know how to get the mouth and form the lips and all of that, but do you understand the process of failure that the kids can hear from you and be able to want to learn from you, bro?
Ooh, so that was heavy, sir.
Telling you, man, I thank God every day for Heights. I thank him every day for Hamilton. Most importantly, for the relationship that you and me have, man.
So we still got some more to go on the episode, even though we probably could have ended right there. So when you said that, I obviously grew up in a very, very, very diverse situation because,
right.
You know, when I think about my educational career, I went to a predominantly white elementary school. I started off in bilingual classes, And then when my teacher, I'll never forget, my kindergarten teacher was like, "Why are you in here?" You know, I like, I don't know.
I don't know. Y'all put me in here.
You're my teacher, you know. And, and so they moved me to Vanguard, which was the GT label at the elementary school. And so I mean, literally from like a Monday to a Tuesday, I went
from
with the bilingual class to a predominantly white class. And then I went to Hamilton Middle School where we taught. And it was a predominantly Latino school, even though it was still Vanguard and GT. And then I went to Lamar High School, which was at the time, and I think it still is. I haven't looked at the demographics.
But one of the diverse schools.
It's one of the most diverse schools in the state of Texas.
Yeah,
it was almost equally like a third, a third, a third. But even there, I was friends with like all kinds of people, man. I got to really know about the Vietnamese culture, and I got some South Asian friends. And I mean, I was really exposed to something that in my neighborhood, in my zip code that where I kind of resided in, otherwise I wouldn't have found out about.
Right.
But I did have a lot of, and then of course I went to PV and HBCU. So of course my educational career had given me an opportunity to be around all kinds of people, all walks of life, and I'm mm-hmm. extremely grateful for that. But I was also exposed to a lot of Latinos that had this mindset, and rightfully so, that if you're a recent immigrant, it was you're here to attain the American dream.
Right.
It was to get the educational attainment, and then to get a well paying job. Mm-hmm. But then there was this part that I started noticing that it was this, I got to move to the suburbs.
Yep.
You know, and I got to, that's the safe place because, you know, I have to get out.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like once I make it out, and I would hear that so often where I would kind of rebuttal that. I was like, nah, you know what? If I come back, I'm going to teach in the hood. I'm going to teach in my neighborhood. I'm going to move back into my neighborhood. You know what I mean? I started, mm-hmm. So even from that age, I operated differently. And so because now I even affirm myself even more that my neighborhood, my upbringing, me working at the flea market in the weekends made me better.
Right.
You know, it made me. And so it's not a label of shame for me.
Yeah.
It's a label of pride and strength because without those experiences, without that environment, I would not be the person I am.
Yeah.
And so if you are a product of those environments, I would ask that you start changing your conversation and start reflecting on what is really good about your neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. I had, you know, when I taught at Davis, my kids had to walk home. And at times, you know, there were no streetlights even on the sidewalks or there weren't even sidewalks. So I get that. There are things that
scary
and out of their control. But there are also things that make them really strong. And a young lady comes to mind at Heights High School when I taught there my last year. She was a freshman. And she told me one day, she's like, "Mr. Jimenez, I can't come to the car wash on Saturday because I have to work at the elote, the corn stand for my uncle." And I was like, "Cool, no problem." And I think she assumed that I was going to get upset.
Yeah.
You know? And I said, "So which one do you work at?" And she's like, "Well, the one over there on Airline." I said, "Cool, man. One day I might stop by and say hi." And she, you know, she probably thought I was joking. And I did. My wife and I went, and I remember seeing her at the booth, and a young man was about to help me, which was younger than her, and said, "You know, can I help you, sir?" I was like, "No, I actually want her to help me."
I already know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And so when she came, and so later on, I remember having this conversation with her, like, "Hey, what do you want to be when you grow up?" And she said, I want to be a physician. I want to be a doctor." But, and then when she started with the butt, I was like, hold on. Why would you not? You know?
Right.
And she started talking about, well, you know, the money and the access and all this stuff. And I said, "I need you to be aware of something.
Right.
You at 14 have worked more and been exposed to more in dealing with the business than most people have with a college degree." You know what I mean? Like, and so I need you to know that the experience that you're getting, although at times you might be frustrated or not understanding why you're doing that,
right,
you are getting this training, this way of operating. And so I reflect on that for me being a DJ at 14, man, where I'm going and signing contracts and working. And when I worked at the flea market with my pops, all those experiences that I probably would have complained about when I was a kid made me even better and stronger as an educator, as an advocate, as a X, Y, and, you know, it has shaped me and made me.
But that's what we miss out on, right? When we say you know, when you and me are telling people to, you know, think about going into these areas, we're not looking for a savior mentality. We're not looking for people to try to right their wrongs and pour back. No, we're saying that, you know, for me, you know, I went to these, you know, mixed schools. I went to A-Leaf for fourth and fifth grade. That was probably majority Black and Latino kids, right? Right there, Southwest A-Leaf, you know. And so when I made it back to my, you know, hometown or whatever, right? I'm in sixth grade. I go from a class, literally one week, I'm in, all, you know, academic class, and they were like, yeah, your son needs to be up. So I moved from being around people that look like me to being like one or two Black people in every core class. Mm-hmm. And then I'm in band. So I really only see Black kids when I go to PE. Like, let's just be honest, right? Yep. PE and lunch. That's it. How y'all doing, man? I'm going to see y'all at school. You know what I'm saying? So here I am, and that's all the way from sixth grade all the way up to, you know, my senior year of high school, going into college. And I would say that when I went into those environments, it wasn't scary because of who I was. You know, it wasn't, I was just like, all right, I'm in here. I made friends with everybody. I knew people knew me. And so for me to take those same experiences and say, I can go into this classroom and teach majority, you know, kids from the Latino community, because I've done this before. I've been, you know, I've been out of my comfort zone to a certain extent. And what I had to do in those situations, the same thing I had to be willing to do, watch this, as an adult. It's easy to do it as a kid, because we're trying to figure out, like, oh, I don't want to be made fun of. But as an adult, you have a conscious decision to say, am I going to go in here and learn to not only learn the kids that I teach, learn to love them, learn to want to pour into them, learn to do things of integrity, even when I'm uncomfortable, even when I don't get it. And that's what makes you better, but it ultimately gives these kids an environment. Because that student that we're talking about, she heard you say, get rid of the butt and put a period there. And that changes her life, man. That changes her life, bro. I don't know. I'm on one tonight.
There's no doubt that I know she's going to be a physician. You know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just the way she was a straight-A student already.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And then then on top of that, you're working Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You know what I mean? And so I am in a place that I want to, and a lot of my work will detail this, is to eliminate the stigma that surrounds teaching in our settings or teaching people that look like you and I, especially with this elitist, ego-filled mentality that at times music schools can produce. It's I'm better than you. You know what I mean? And some of the systems that we have of auditions and making a certain ensemble and all these things that creates, you know, indirectly this elitism that cannot deter us from knowing that we have an opportunity to go and just teach. You know, and I really want to make sure that that's shared upon, that there's an opportunity to do that. And you touched it really well. Don't go in there with the savior mentality. Go in there to serve those students, you know, and serve with integrity, knowing that you are creating the space and the opportunity to learn from them as well.
Yes, man. Yeah, because you can be getting saved. That's the difference, right? Like, we go in with this mentality, like, I know it all, I got it. Yeah, you do. You got the pedagogy, you got the skill set, you've been in classes for the last, you know, 4.5, maybe 5 years, you got it. But that's not that all that this job entails, man. That this job entails that the students want to learn from you, but they want to also teach you something. Because from year to year, what are you taking from each class? What are you taking from each grade level? What are you taking from each band class, that beginner woodwind class that's frustrating, that beginner percussion class, that, you know, that second band or whatever? What are you taking that you're throwing in a bag to be able to pour out into other kids? Because it's a two-way street. It's a two-way street. So, yeah,
man. Takeaways, man. What you got for them?
Listen, y'all need to stop playing, get this money. No, no, listen, honestly, from the bottom of my heart, we would see more unity and we would see better representation across our music programs across the state if we stop putting labels, right? I'm not telling you not to do your research on schools. I'm not telling you not to do your research on, you know, the areas. What I'm saying is, after you've done the research, ask yourself, are you willing to grow or do you want to stay the same? If you want to grow, put yourself in an environment that is going to force you to grow. If you don't want to grow, if you want to stay the same and you just kind of want to, you know, be a part of the culture, be a part of this band thing, then by all means, go, you know, sit somewhere, do paperwork, all of that. But if you want to really learn, if you really want to grow, if you want to make an impact on these students, and we want to see the unity that we don't see in the world, we could see that in our music programs. And it could begin to speak volumes to where we can be as a society if we are willing to go into places that don't necessarily deem or are not deemed, you know, the elite. So, yeah.
The other day, my wife sent me this poem entitled The Bridge Builder. Mm. And I'm going to read part of it. And it said, "Old man," said a fellow pilgrim near, "you are wasting strength in building here. Your journey will end with the ending day. You never again must pass this way. You have crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you the bridge at the event tide?" The builder lifted his old gray head and said, "Good friend, in the path I have come," he said, "there felloth after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way, this chasm that has been not to me. To that fair-haired youth may a pitfall be. He, too, must cross into the twilight dim. Good friend, I am building the bridge for him." Mm. And my wife's like, "This is you." And
yeah.
I started thinking about, because I'm willing to go into some spaces and kind of knock some doors down.
Come on.
I'm willing to make that, pull up a chair and join this, you know, where you and I could have easily done a podcast by ourselves at TMEA when we were invited.
Yeah.
But we decided to bring people literally to the stage and to the table to share so many conversations. And this is an opportunity for more of us to be willing to teach people that look like Justin and I, come from settings like Justin and I. Mm-hmm. This is the plea to consider.
Yeah.
And be willing to operate of integrity. And you would be surprised at the outcome that will come out of serving with integrity, with fidelity, and ultimately with love.
Yeah.
This has been another production of The Score. Connect with us on social media at PodTheScore. Send us an email, podthescore@gmail.com, or visit our website, revivalmusicproject.org. If you've enjoyed this episode, do us a huge favor. Rate and review us. This will help us reach even more listeners. Intro music by Justin McLean. The rotation and outro music by Ben Borges. And as always, let's continue to impact these lives through the vehicle of music.